We at the Uncle Hack Podcast would like to take time to give you a public service announcement about the audio quality of this episode. We apologize deeply. Actually, no, we don't. We do apologize to Sam Walker, who did take time out of his day to come and chat with us, because we are fucking idiots here. And somewhere and sometime, the audio was lost that was recorded from our drivers. So yeah, we just want to say we're fucking idiots.
Welcome to the Uncle Hack Podcast, where dudes pretty much just talk dude shit.
Welcome back to another Uncle Hack Podcast. I have Mr. Sam Walker in studio with me today.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm happy you're here too. We had the pleasure of meeting each other at Yuck Yucks 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
in a blood sport battle.
That was my first time back on that stage in 7 months.
Did it feel good?
It felt great. It was awesome. That was a great show. That was it was called the Two Mirror Showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fella named, the one and only Brett Forte.
Yes.
And another guy named Todd Ness.
Yeah.
And they're the Two Mirrors. They had a podcast going on. And they each pick a contestant to go head-to-head in a blood sport battle.
In a very blood sport battle.
The audience decides, and we each got a 10-minute set, and you got to, that was your first time on a Yuck Yuck stage.
Yeah, first time ever in a comedy club to do stand-up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great place to get your cherry popped.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree.
You did, to your credit, you did great. You had a great set, and you ended up winning. You ended up winning the audience award.
Yeah. I don't know if it was just out of sheer embarrassment, because I opened up so poorly with a fall off the stage and then a mic cord falling out. So I think it was more out of sympathy. But you know what? Nobody ever counts how the goal goes in. You know, it's the score at the end.
100%. And this is show business, not show friends.
Yeah.
So it is. there is an aspect of competitiveness to this. And I'm a five-time roast battle champion.
At Yuck Yucks.
Yeah. Brett Forte's roast battles. I'm essentially the Hulk Hogan of roast battles.
When it comes to Alberta roast battle. I guess because you took that title out west too, didn't you?
I have. I am 4 times undefeated in intercity competition.
Mm.
Nobody coming close to that.
They don't want no smoke, is what you're saying.
They say they do, but they're liars. Always liars. And I really took that to a next level, and so it was nice to be back on the stage competing, in the sense, like, a comedy competition is a bunch of happy horse shit.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, but the crowd likes to cheer for somebody, and I'm really glad it was you. If somebody was going to beat me, I'm glad it was you.
I appreciate that.
Because there really wasn't anybody else that could have beat me.
Hey, I agree. You know what? They had to ship in an Edmonton boy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you're essentially making the mega powers go against one another. You know, you tear up the stage, I'll tear up the fucking YouTube, and now we got to collide.
Yeah. An unstoppable force meets an immovable object.
There it is, brother. Oh, yeah. Electrifying. Oh, yeah.
The handsomeness in this room, I gotta say, is just off the charts.
We don't even have studio lights on right now. It's beaming in here.
The security guard downstairs was getting out the lubricant when I walked in the building. He knew what was going down.
Yeah, he also hasn't had a boner in 60 years, so right now he's calling up some escorts, is what I'm getting at. He's calling up some ladies of the evening.
Well, this is Edmonton, and let me tell you, the ladies of the evening out here are fine. I really love this. I love this city. I may be from Calgary, but I love Edmonton.
Do you find when you come up here and do your comedy, it resonates more with the people here or in Calgary? Because you could, let's call it what it is, you're more of a blue comedy, kind of dark humor.
And that's my style. I laugh at that shit. I like your comedy. I pissed myself.
Goddamn right. That's about as high a compliment as you can get. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that fairly often, actually. A lot of women come up to me after the show, mascara running because they were crying and laughing so hard. And I peed a little. And it's like, thank you.
No, that was just pre-cum.
It is. Yeah, it was nice to see that you've thrown your hat in the stand-up comedy ring, because it's been diluted out there. It really has, especially over the past 8 or 9 months, however long this crisis has been going on.
Yeah.
It really changed the landscape overnight. Like, everything about what we do is being contradicted in the regulations and...
In terms of, like, speech and everything, is that what you're cutting?
That's definitely an avenue towards, but the business model for a comedy club,
yeah,
and really any business, is to pack in as many people as possible, serve them as much drinks and food as you can, and get them out of there for the next show.
Yeah.
And now it's the complete opposite of that. We need to bring in the minimum amount of people that we can possibly have and serve them sparingly.
Yeah.
They aren't, they're being really careful with over-serving and stuff like that. They don't want to be making too many trips, any of that stuff.
Which is weird. You'd think, like, right now would be, especially the time that we're in, would be, you want to just, A, get them fuckers in there and fill them piss-loaded till they, you know what I mean? Like that to me seems...
It would, but it's all being handicapped. Like, everything about the business model is like, no, don't have too many people at a table and keep these people docile.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
You don't want them getting too rowdy and expressing their feelings too much. And then also, like, in the olden days, the worst nightmare for a stand-up crowd was having a spread-out audience across the room. You always wanted them as close to the front as possible and then kind of let it peter out into the darkness from the back. But now that's an optimal crowd. And I got to say, like, our show on the Two Mirror Showcase was far and away the best show they had ever done.
Really?
And however long they were running that turkey for, like, 6 months to a year.
Really?
And I had on good notice from staff and comedians and management there that our show, where we competed head-to-head against one another, it was electric.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could hear it in the audience. There was an electricity, a buzz, and the servers were serving a lot of drinks, and it was a Corona sellout, which is as good as it gets these days.
Yeah.
And we both did really well. Like, you're green as grass, but you've got the gift of gab. You're a funny guy. And
thanks, man.
That doesn't always translate onto that stage.
No, I've noticed it's really tough. It's very hard, mm-hmm. but I think it's just a lot of reading the room. This is my analysis of over, you know, I've maybe touched a stage 12 times, and that just being one in a comedy club. The rest are bars and, you know, open mics and shit around Edmonton. And I've noticed, like, it's when you walk into that room, you can feel like, this is in my crowd. Like, there's certain locations that I walk into and I know that this is going to be for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to make this for me. And if I'm laughing over them being uncomfortable, I still fucking win at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, that's an important note, is comedy isn't about consent. You're there to make people laugh,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have to... You know, you don't have to pander and dilute yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're coming in pure persona, and you're a funny guy. And I was in the green room. I honestly didn't get to hear a lot other than I heard people laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was how I knew you were doing well.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, like, I don't have, I, you know what, I'll be honest, I lied. I told Brett that I got 10 minutes. I did 10 minutes at one CyberCon. I fucking lied through my teeth. And then as I'm driving down, I remember looking at the old lady and be like, look, I don't have 10 minutes worth of material. I'm going in here fucking handcuffed, man. And I'm praying to God that just the way I interact with people, and I can drum up something. And my whole drive down, I'm just like, anxiety ridden. I'm like, fuck, I don't have 10 minutes worth of comedy. I've got 4 and it's awful and it's not ironed out.
Well, it didn't matter because you had them and your crowd work was a lot of fun. And then I heard you almost fell off the stage and it's like, hey, this ain't dancing for dollars.
No.
And you, speaking of this ain't dancing for dollars, you won $100 off of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A brown one. And it felt, I still got it. I'm that big of a tightwad.
Is that your first $100 in comedy?
My first 100 in comedy.
That's great.
Yeah, it was really cool. Like, it felt really good. Like, you know, like, do you recall, like, the first time when you touched a stage in a comedy club and just, like, that feeling? Did you have that anxiety and that nauseous kind of feeling? Like, fuck.
There's always going to be a bit of that. Like, that's good. That's your body getting ready for battle. And that's
That's
essentially what we're doing, is going into the arena for the blood sport. And, it was, if you're not nervous, then you're going to shit the bed.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Like, it's, it ain't happening. But, yeah, my first time was for the Yuck and Comers comedy competition in 2016. That was my first time being on their stage. And I rocked it. It was good. But I'd been hitting the open mics for a good year. And I was a bit polished and ready for that kind of stuff.
Right.
Didn't win the competition, but that did not matter. Just the fact that I had made it onto that stage was enough for the powers that be to send me out on the road. And out west here, they throw you to the wolves. And it's sink or swim.
Yeah.
And I obviously swam.
The guy's got some flippers on him.
Mark Spitz style, daddy. I was Mark the Shark out there, and I didn't miss a beat, and I haven't stopped since. Like, it's just been every day is more good news after that. Getting booked for shows, bigger and better shows.
And you got a shout out from Mark Breslin, man.
Yeah, the godfather of Canadian comedy.
Right.
He, I got to showcase for him in Toronto in 2018. And blew the roof off of that place.
Good for you, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah, at that time, it was like the set of my life. And he was there to acknowledge and notice it. Because he sees them all. He mm-hmm. sees them all. And for him to specifically come out to see me, and for me to deliver, especially deliver, because he's, I won't say jaded, but he just kind of gets into a zone where he's not even really paying attention. He's just listening to the crowd, but I guarantee I had his goddamn attention. And it was, it was storybook, man.
Fuck yeah. You've had, like, a...
Meant to do.
Yeah. In, like, the progression that's happening, like, this fucking COVID thing kind of fucked you, especially on the momentum-wise. Like, with Kill Tony, you had your set on Kill Tony.
Yeah.
And then got to open for him after, I'm correct?
Yeah, I did. I got to do 2 shows with him that weekend, and... The first show was a rocky one, but he enjoyed it tremendously.
Yeah.
Like, comedians love watching them creep out an audience. And that first audience wasn't ready for me. And then the second show of the night, I killed it and kind of cemented. Like, I wasn't just a fly-by-night guy. I seriously deserved to be there.
Yeah.
And I delivered. And then I got to do JFL Northwest, Just for Laughs, Northwest in Vancouver in February.
Nice.
And that was another Kill Tony. Their largest ever, 1,300, sold out show at the Vogue Theater on Granville Street. And yeah, I was heading into that. And then I had an album recording on February 28th and recorded a comedy concert film that'll be coming out in the near future.
Perfect. Is there no set release date for it yet?
No, I got legal wranglings going on. That's how you know you're getting successful.
Yeah.
It's because the vultures come to... They're starting to circle.
Yeah, they want to pick your bones of something.
They want to say, well, tough shit, I'm still fucking alive, and it's all muscle, daddy. Ain't no bones to pick yet.
No, I see a lot of muscle still there.
Well, I'm a working man like you. I do come from a blue-collar background, and I feel really honored to be doing comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is like the cherry on top of my life. Like, I've built a foundation. If I never got to go on stage again, it wouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I gave it all while I had it and did it. And I know what to do with my body to make money.
Oh, time for a little ad. That's right. If you go to DangerCatShop.com right now, you can get 15% off your order. New products now available on the site. That's right, we got crew neck sweatshirts on there. And if you use the code HACK15, you'll receive 15% off your order. Also, the Patreon. You want an extra episode of this podcast? Not a problem. Head on over to patreon.com/dangercat69. We're going to release an audio version exclusive podcast every week when this podcast is released. So you will not only get this episode that you're listening to 48 hours earlier than everybody else, but you get an extra episode when this one drops that you're watching right now or listening to on Patreon. So patreon.com/dangercat69. You can also become a producer of the podcast by subscribing to the Danger Dong tier. I don't know which tier it's labeled, but you can become that. Anyways, back to the podcast.
I'm skilled.
I can see that.
And I see a lot of your fans. That's how they make their living. You know, they aren't lollygaggers. They aren't guys that are sitting on a couch waiting for the dole.
No, it's a lot of blue collar dudes that, they get out there, they get it done, and it's sick to have an you know what? That audience, I think, is the best audience, because those dudes, they bust their ass, and when they come to a show, they are there to have a fucking good time.
And they fucking get it. They got a sense of humor, and they're not worried what three people doors down are going to be thinking about them.
No, they don't give a fuck. No.
Jinx!
Right? But yeah, it's like, my theory is when you have to work that hard in battle conditions like winter up here, the last thing you give a fuck about is a word hurting your feeling. You know what I mean? Like, when you gotta go and like touch cold steel in minus 35 with a 80 kilometer wind chill, the last thing you think of is being called a pussy offensive. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's all in a day's work, man.
Yeah.
That's all in a day's work. I lived out in British Columbia.
Yeah.
Because they're fucking lawless out there. You try and be an honest working man out there and you get punished. For real.
Unions, eh?
Beyond that, taxes.
Oh, yeah.
BC liquor.
Mm.
ICBC insurance. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. And they don't have that Alberta Puritan work ethic out there. They were more of a, hey, let's take a relaxed attitude towards work. And hey, I enjoy having a nice job site.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're not getting over and you're not putting out, you can get the fuck off site, man.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was a go hard retard too. Like, I went from this job that was 90 miles a minute and it's nonstop all day long to going to be in a field operator where I just drove in a pickup to check pressures on pipe, and I was going bananas. Yeah. It was like I was almost ready to just start breaking shit just to fix it, you know what I mean? And cause problems so that way I can do something.
Yeah, the Weibo Ludwig.
Yeah.
Supervisor.
Yeah.
God bless that man.
Did you have experience in the oil patch, or was it like when you say blue collar, what were you usually doing?
Oh man, I've done a lot of stuff over the years, and I was always well behaved enough that I didn't have to get sent up north to go work. I was always able to swim in the in the construction industry.
Right.
And that was my thing. And out of high school I got into roofing.
Oh.
Talk about, I think maybe a coal miner could possibly be a worse job than that.
No doubt.
But that's like, and it was year round in Calgary area.
Oh, it was not just like, hey.
No, it wasn't a summer job. It was year round. So I understand the being outside in the cold, dangerous up on a roof. And we do like houses in Mount Royal and whatnot. Like they were kind of la-di-da. So like 12 pitches and peaks and.
Right.
Ladder jacks and me carrying all the bullshit up, and I never saw myself in having my own crew or running it and doing it. Like it was always just a job,
just go and work.
Yeah. And so I reassessed my life after a couple of years in reality, and I decided to get into a different trade, and drywall finishing, mudding and taping. I'm a master craftsman at that, and I specialize in painted ceilings.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't really consider it a trade. It's more like an art. That's what I do, an art form.
And so that's what I do on my off time. And I'm also a useful guy for helping people out. Anything you need to do, I may not be leading the crew, but I'll be a good hand.
You always got the hands in the mix, eh?
Yeah. And I always steel-toed boots, safety glasses, and gloves. Don't travel without them.
At least one.
Always one. If, hey, if you see me with two of these on, it's already too late. Yeah, you're in trouble.
Fuck. So when did you make the transition to comedy then? Like, was it later in life, or were you always dabbling in it?
Yeah, you know what? I've always been I was always the funniest guy in school.
Yeah, like the class clown dicking around, doing anything for a laugh.
Yeah, not anything for a laugh, because I got a really serious side to myself. I'm serious like a heart attack in situations. But that also breeds the comedy. Is like the more serious you are, the funnier things get.
Right.
And the more serious I get sometimes, the funnier it gets. So there's always that kind of, dichotomy. And I'm a complicated person, like everybody is.
Yeah, well, 100%.
Most everybody. There are some simple folk out there. And, I always gravitated towards making my friends laugh. That was always a big thing. But stand-up seemed to be like this impossible dream and didn't know how to get to it. But back in like the early 2000s, I'm talking about turn of the century here.
Yeah.
I started getting into making my own short films and stuff like that.
Okay.
And when YouTube first came up in 2006, I was on that. And I had videos that were getting banned, that were getting copyright infringement, age restriction, back in 06. So I knew back then I was on the right path.
Yeah. That almost took a skill of its own, because back then it was a cowboy era of fucking man. YouTube. You know what I mean?
Everything hadn't been uploaded then. Like, there was stuff that you could search for, and it just wasn't there.
Yeah, I'm 90% sure they had porn on YouTube then.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It was absolutely the Wild West days. And then what happened with that is I just, I had about 18, 20 videos out there, and the production just wasn't there for to continue on. Like, I wanted to keep doing it.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a team around me that could, and teamwork makes the dream work. Mm-hmm. You need people.
And that's before, you know, creators were getting the ad spend.
Oh, yeah.
It was a tough grind.
So I wrapped that up about 08. I was finished with that, and then kind of went into a bit of a cocoon there to just kind of figure out the next way I was doing. And then around 2012, I just got back into, I took some acting classes.
Okay.
Company of Rogues in Calgary.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, getting into that, helping you get ready. It wasn't like teach you how to cry. Or whatnot. It was more like how to have a good audition and how to fine tune your monologues and stuff like that. And so it was incredibly helpful. It gave me a real idea of what my presence was. Always a strong presence, but this was like you're in a class with a bunch of wannabes, and you really figured out who was serious and who wasn't.
Right.
Kind of thing. And I was ready to go. And so I started auditioning for theater, live theater.
Okay.
And got into that scene for a couple of years.
Okay. And was it more like comedy based, or was just like you would kind of do anything just to kind of?
I did. I enjoy dramatic acting.
Yeah.
And whatnot. That's a big part of.
They do say comedians make like the most like dark characters.
I'm ready for anything. I see these jackanapes. Celebrities go up and try and make a speech for an award or some bullshit.
Yeah.
And just watching them, it's like there's shit in the bed. Get somebody to write your lines for you. Like, I write my own lines, I write my own jokes. You put me in front of a microphone, I'm gonna go 100 miles an hour, and you're gonna have to light me, because I don't want to give up the mic. I walk into a room, I see a microphone, I want on it. And so it acting becomes much easier because you understand, you're comfortable in yourself. But my first role on the stage was in Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, okay.
Workshop Theater presents Night of the Living Dead. And I think the director was Roger LeBlanc. I don't know if he's still around.
French director, must have been good.
Yeah.
He was a young guy, and I ended up auditioning for one of the leads. Didn't get it, but he asked, "Do you want to be a zombie?" Fuck yeah, I want to be a zombie.
Hell yeah.
And so, yeah, I became lead zombie, and it was great. I got killed multiple times throughout the show and costume changes. It was serious business. It was a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun. And then the next big one was I got the lead role of Miracle on 34th Street playing Fred Gailey.
Mm.
Yeah, I say good Santa score. Claus is bacon, yeah.
Good score.
It was great, and it was a huge role. Like, I remember looking at my lines, and there's like page after page, and it was like, "Ooh, shit, son, you better get learning."
Does it, like, man, I got a shitty fucking memory. Like, for something like that, like, are you constantly like...
It's a huge thing, remembering lines. And until your lines, it's known as being off book.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you're off book, then you're ready for the performance. But if you are struggling for your lines while you're on stage, the performance is never going to grow and evolve.
Right.
It's going to be shit and garbage. And so I made damn sure, especially as my first lead, and there was like a cast of 35, 40 people in that, aging from age from like 3 years old to 80 years old.
Right.
It's a large production. And I didn't want them sitting there, me hemming and hawing over my lines. So I had an actor friend who gave me some helpful tips and tricks. And what I did is I wrote it up on a big poster, wrote up the huge monologues and put symbols and numbers around stuff so that I knew, just to help in the memorization. And I just read that and memorize it and go to work. And while I'm working, running my lines.
Huh.
And that's part of the, yeah, that's an advantage.
Did you do that with your comedy too?
Oh yeah, yeah. When I was first starting out, I'd be working during the day and then hitting the open mics at night.
Yeah.
And yeah, during my work day. And taping is a really solitary thing. Like, there's usually not a lot of people or equipment around you because everything's got to be out of the way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just go. And then if there's nobody around, I'd say it out loud. And like practice my enunciation and what words I was going to use, because when you're starting out, like, hack, you got a storybook career starting here with you. You know, you get to start out at a club and you get 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's huge. And you didn't die. You didn't die. And that's, you live to fight another day.
I'm worried about that, man. I thought, I'm like, first off, Forte, you fucking dick. I'm like, because he texts me, he's like, "You're versus Sam Walker."
Yeah.
I'm like, "Are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, is this a joke?" And he's like, "No.
Yeah.
You're versus a 5-year guy." I'm like, "Lovely. So this is what this is? You just fucking..."
Yeah.
And I laugh. I think it's fucking funny. Let the YouTube dick wants to come and try his hand at comedy. So yeah. Then, like, man, I was... the moment I heard that, I was just... I remember just sitting there being like, I fucking showed the text to the old lady, and I'm like, "Look at this. I'm worse." And she goes, "Oh, I don't really know who, I don't follow the comedy scene like you do, you moron."
Yeah.
So we went, I showed her all your bits online. Whew. And YouTube, and like, you're crushing and just murdering on stage. I was like, "He was on fucking Kill Tony, for Christ's sakes." And she's like, "Well, it'll go fine." Your typical girl response, "You know what, it'll be great. Yeah. You're going to do great, no matter what." I'm like, "Yeah, you know what, you're right. At the end of the day, sure, it's competition, it's a blood sport."
Yeah.
Me and you pulled our swords out, but it's still show. We got to put on a show.
We did, and that was...
And I think that was the fun part of it.
It was, and I respect you. I've seen you over the years and seen how far you've come, mm-hmm. And obviously there's a small crossover in our fan base.
Yeah, big time.
But I'm... Gorilla Underground. I am not meant for CBC.
No.
Or corporate comedy gigs.
Do you ever want to do that, or you're like, "Fuck that"?
I'm Canadian. Fuck that shit, man. Yeah. All 80-year-old people watch that trash.
I agree.
And it's a billion-dollar budget they got. Billions of dollars they got. And for what? I wouldn't listen to it if you paid me.
Every time I put on CBC comedy, man, like... Other than like a guy like Charles Haycock, he makes me laugh because he's a funny guy.
He is. And clean. Yeah, he can work clean too.
And every time I've seen him in the city, super funny guy. But then the follow-up act, I'm like, this is awful. And it is. It is. Yeah. It's catered to that 80 feel-good TV. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. don't upset the order of things. Don't make people think dog and cat jokes. Here you go.
Yeah. My wife said to me the other day, and it's like, oh, God, here we go. I'm 10 minutes of this shit, like, and here I am shit-talking comics, and I'm a somebody, but at the same time, like, I can't, like, I respect guys like Big J. Okerson, you know, the fucking, who else would be?
Legion of Skanks.
Yeah, Legion of Skanks. I'm a huge Tim Dillon fan. Like, I like these guys that kind of look at Hollywood and all them and just kind of say, fuck you, I'm going to do my own shit. Comedy club don't want me. Oh, I'll go somewhere else.
I know those names. I know who they are, but I don't watch any contemporary comedy these days online because I know these guys are funny.
Yeah,
and I don't want to maybe be unduly influenced by something they're saying, or if we have the same premise, I don't want to drop it. If I want to be stealing accidentally,
right? That's a good point
for sure. So I'm not a huge advocate of watching.
Mm-hmm.
Go to shows. Don't watch it online on Netflix or anything like that. Anything that's really going to be good enough for Netflix, you don't want to be seen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because those, that's all milk toast, watered down, trash.
Yeah, man. The moment my sister is recommending a comedy special to me, I know it fucking sucks. You know, she's like, hey, you should watch the new Bert Kreischer one. And I, you know what? Yeah. He's a funny guy, but it's just not for me. I can't. Yeah. It's really dad humor for me.
Yeah, and, you know? Like, you're going to be watching it going like, damn it, I could go out there and do just as good a goddamn job as him, right?
Yeah, so I could peel a tarp and wiggle my cock.
Is that what he does? He takes his shirt off, too.
He peels a tarp,
yeah.
But he has a barrel to back it up.
Yeah.
I just look like a fucking, you know, a cancer patient that found McDonald's.
Not bad. Looking good, Daddy. Yeah. Looking good. Could be a lot worse.
But yeah, back to like the contemporary comedy and shit like that. It's good. It's refreshing when guys like you hit a stage, though. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
To shake up the fucking system.
It definitely does. And it's amazing that I even made it into the money game in this, because basically to get out there, you're doing 5-minute sets at open mics, or maybe you get a guest spot at a club or something like that. And you got to do really well in order to get noticed. And you got to do really well consistently. And there were so many times I was thrown on a show with like, just like milk toast after pussy, after loser, after wimp. And then me coming up on stage and just fucking knocking their dicks in the dirt, man. Like, they did not see it coming. And a 5-minute whirlwind, and then the MC would have to go up and take 5 minutes just to calm the crowd down before the headliner takes the stage. And then after that, people coming up to me after the show and saying, that was awesome. And it's like, it's 5 minutes. It's not a lot of time. And so I knew I was on the right path.
Yeah.
And if you don't... if you don't take the most advantage of the stage time that you get, if you ever go on stage and like, oh, I'll just half-ass it, then get the fuck out of this business, man.
Yeah, yeah. Like, do you... Now, you've been in the game now for, what, 5-6 years?
Yeah, I'll be coming up on 6.
Yeah. Do you see that a lot? You see these guys that... Obviously, you're going to see guys come in and think, well, I can do stand-up, and then obviously leave. But then do you see... What do you think's worse? Here's a question for you. The guy that comes and just, oh, I could be stand-up, and then does like 3-4 sets, realizes he sucks, leaves, or that and kind of chews up mic time, especially now, or the guy that just kind of fucking does not get it?
Well, that's the thing, is if you're not, if in the first couple of years you're not starting to make money at it,
mm-hmm.
kill yourself. You're never going to make it. Like, uh-huh. you're just not going to make it. Like, you can't teach funny. You either have it or you don't. You can get better at it, but it's like, it's one of those intangibles of like, how do you make the NHL?
Yeah.
You know, like there's...
Some naturally have it and some have to work for it.
Exactly. And when you naturally have it and you work for it, then it's a lethal combination. And so if I see somebody, I enjoy watching somebody die 1,000 deaths up there.
Yeah.
That's great. Like, it's still good comedy. But, you know, if they're, as long as they're putting in effort and trying to get better, if you're making the same mistakes over and over or telling the same joke that bombs every time and you're not trying something new, then you're not growing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not there to make the other comedians laugh. You're there for the audience.
Yeah.
And so the only rule is funny trumps everything.
Yeah.
If you're funny, that'll get you through. And if you're not, then what are you doing? Like, this is the whole point. And then if you bomb your set and then you stick around afterwards, embarrassing. Go, leave. Be gone.
Yes. Oh, man. My first set ever was awful. I opened with, I've told Brett this story. So I opened with, my hometown is known for two things, corn and a school shooting.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought in my head it'd be a good idea to come out hard and heavy with
Tabor.
Yeah.
We love Tabor corn.
Tabor corn, yeah. And I was like, I even said that. I was like, I grew up in Tabor and we're only known for two things. And one guy in the back goes, Tabor corn! I'm like, yeah, there's always one retard that says that. What a lot of you don't know is when the Gats come out.
Yeah.
And coincidentally, the Reverend's son got shot. This. So I was making a joke about how God really does. I was trying to.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say I made a joke. I was trying to make a joke about how God really doesn't care about, you know, the Reverend's son that's in a public school, you know, rather than a religious school.
Should have went to Catholic school.
You should have. We were safe over there.
We learned.
But it just, my whole set bombed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know I was awful. I know for a fact that was awful. My jokes sucked. Everything about it sucked.
Yeah.
But it was just like, okay, back to the drawing board. I think it was trying to be too edgy, you know?
It is, and you do have to win the audience over before you can drop a bomb on them like that.
Yeah.
So, but that's how you learn. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm all about making mistakes. Just don't make them 2-3 times, right?
Yeah.
Learn from it, right? And you got to. It's a badge of honor, too, because there's a lot of people that did that. Tried the same thing you did, and they're never coming back.
Yeah, I've heard like 2-3 people that said they tried and went up, and they like got zero laughs, and they're like, "I'll never do that again." And I kind of looked at them like, "You're kind of a pussy." Like,
totally.
So this is what I told myself when I started writing jokes. I told it to one buddy, and I said, "Listen, I'm doing this for 3 years. If I don't get a paid gig in 3 years, I'm done."
Yeah.
And because like, you listen to any well-groomed comic that's been around for a minute or two, everybody said, I didn't get good till like the 7th year, 8th year.
Yeah.
And in the 3 years, I just grinded the open mic scene and was getting these little spots here and there.
Yeah.
And that's in my head. That's what I told myself. Like, it's not going to be like, oh, we're going to go do this for a month, see if I like it.
Yeah.
No, it's a grind.
It is. And it's a lot of traveling and getting around. And that's really cool that you came all the way down to Calgary from Edmonton, because it took me a long time to start doing, well, within my first year, starting to stretch out and do road gigs. I used to drive up to Edmonton to the casino, do a set there, a 5-minute guest spot, stay for the show, and then drive home in the same night for a 5-minute spot.
Yeah.
And that's what it takes to get to the next level.
Hell yeah. Like when Brett told me, hey, I'll give you 10 in Yuck Yucks.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, well, I got to work the next day. I don't give a fuck. I'm going down there. I'll make whatever needs to happen, because that's a fucking opportunity that not most people are going to get, especially in these times right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And what's extra special about the show that we were on, other than our meeting and getting to see each other in real life, and I just got to say, you're just one of the handsomest men I've ever seen in my entire life.
Well, I'm looking at you, and I'm seeing a great mustache. A fabulous hairstyle.
Thank you.
And like right down to the boots. You went with the tan pants. This was not planned, gentlemen.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be this guy, but we kind of got the same sequence going on with the undershirt here.
Yeah, it's definitely...
So we're just looking at...
Color-coded.
Yeah, we're
This is my like Freddy Krueger light.
Yeah.
That I go for. And it's...
L-I-T-E or G-H-T?
It ain't a
50-50.
Beer. 50-50. Yeah. We don't drink light beer out here. But back to that show. That was the final ever Two Mirror Showcase.
And we rocked the house.
And we rocked it.
Respect.
Set the standard. You got paid $100. Todd paid me $200 just to be on the show because he wanted that. kind of quality. So I made my money, because this ain't dancing for dollars, Todd. You know it. And then
I respect the under the table deal, by the way.
Yeah, thanks. It's the way she goes. I don't want to take anything from your win, but if I won that $100, I had a Sharpie in my pocket. I was going to autograph it and pin it to the fucking green room wall.
Respect. I would like that move.
And watch all the open micers.
And when you left, I would put DC69 on it. Just kind of throw my tag on it. Just
good. That's the way to go.
That's the attitude we share.
Yeah, there's going to be, I have a feeling that there's going to be plenty more shows that we're on in the coming days, weeks, and months, and years.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. But one show we'll never, ever get to do again is the Two Mirror Showcase, because that no longer exists. And
really?
there's been some controversy in the last couple of weeks.
I did see a small amount of it, but, I mean, you're in the Calgary scene. And
I am. And this is, comedy is a brotherhood.
Yeah.
Even if you're a woman, it's a brotherhood.
Right.
This is something that, you know, you're a part of. We're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
And this ain't for everybody. And those that know, know. Real recognizes real. And steel sharpens steel.
100%.
So you want to associate yourself with the best and the brightest as much as possible. And Brett Forte is a tremendous rival of mine. I have incredible respect for him, and he's a rival. I love to compete against him, and he's bar none the finest young comedian in Canada, maybe even in North America, by far. Like, his professionalism is beyond anything, and he got into some hot water recently.
I did see that.
So he has a joke, and he's been telling it for 4 years, and the punchline is East Indiana Jones, taken from a newspaper story from a Sikh man that rescued a lady in Kamloops a number of years ago, used the fabric from his turban and brought it in. And Brett tells this joke forever. And recently in Calgary, there was some Sikh gentleman that rescued some young kids that had fallen through the ice. And they used whatever they had to get these kids out and save their life.
Right.
And so Brett goes and hops on the news story and does a joke about it. Well, somebody out there does a hatchet job on him and edits together a small segment. And they preface it with 1990, some guy in Alberta complaining about turbans being in the RCMP. It was a thing back then. You're pretty young.
I recall, like, the big thing with the turban with me is, like, guys bitching is the motorcycle thing.
Yeah, know? And so, it's like, you know, your life, your choice, whatever you want to do.
Whatever floats your boat, man.
Exactly. And so they preface it with that 1990, this guy that was like, no, they shouldn't. And then they fade it into 2020, and they show, like, a minuscule clip of Brett on stage doing an Indian accent, part of his joke. No context, no punchline, no anything. And they made it into a haterade get together. And he got more than 1,000 death threats, canceled off of Instagram instantly. And, you know, it's just a poor situation, because he wasn't being mean or malicious. It's, you're part of Canada, we're all here to laugh.
Yeah.
It's a form of acceptance.
I will say, like, too, even in the bit, I've heard the bit, yeah. And he praises the man, what, 2, 3, 4 times by calling him a hero? And
probably then, 5. I haven't heard the joke in a while.
But yeah.
It's a great joke, and it always does well. And for them to take him down for that kind of a joke was just kind of obscene. Obscene and unnatural. It's self-censorship and whatnot. And so this happens to Brett. And CBC, he was recently profiled as one of the top comics in Canada, CBC. They yanked his profile down, his special, everything gone overnight.
Wow.
Just, within like hours of this thing going on. And then a few days later, this happened on November 3rd of this month.
Yeah.
That's when Brett got canceled. And within,
don't you hate how that sounds? Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but don't you hate how that sounds?
I
got canceled.
I do, and that's the thing, is it could happen to any one of us out there. Anybody. they can take something and misconstrue it till the cows come home, especially comedy.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, it's a travesty.
There is hours and hours of shit that I have said that it's just, all we're missing is that cigarette lit at the gas pump and it's a kaboom, baby.
Yeah, it is. And there's a big difference of things you say in the privacy of your buds while you're having beers and then what you say in public or on stage.
Yes.
And so Brett gets done. And so he's been doing this podcast with Todd Ness, another supposedly up-and-coming comedian here in based out of Calgary.
Right.
For the past year and a half. And Todd was one quarter of the Two Mirrors podcast and showcase. He was riding Brett's coattails. He was getting taken to the next level by Brett. And he decides after less than 4 days to completely distance himself from everything related to Two Mirrors. He dropped it like it was hot. Quit Ooh. The podcast.
Really?
Quit doing shows with Brett. Quit doing the Two Mirrors showcase, that show that you and I were on.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, just completely threw it away. And he's going out on Instagram talking about like, oh yeah, no, I haven't quit comedy. I'm still doing comedy. Everything's fine. That's what he said. And Todd Ness, no, everything isn't fine.
Okay, yeah,
it isn't fine. You're not, this could happen to you just as much as it could happen to Brett. And for you to turn tail and run and be scared about not getting your CBC special. First off, Todd didn't get the CBC special. He's not even on their radar. Mm-hmm. They don't give a rat's ass about it.
Sorry, equipment rudely interrupted you.
That's fine. I was getting a bit heated there because I feel very passionate about this. Mm-hmm. And the fact that comedy isn't about consent and Todd Ness is looking to please everybody, that's never, ever going to happen. You're never going to be loved by everybody, so why even try? And to throw Brett under the bus, Brett's my greatest rival, mm-hmm. but I consider him a brother. That's why our rivalry has been so hot and so heated, and that's why we're so passionate, and we fight on stage.
It's like the Rock and Stone Cold. Sometimes you just got to collab forces, but you know what? At the end of the day, we're still gunning for the title, right?
It is, and then to see Brett get treated that way, when he's the one carrying everything, that's going to go down as the defining moment in Todd's career where everything, it's the reverse Midas touch. It's going to turn to shit, I guarantee you. He just ain't got the stones. He's a coward. And Todd Ness, I want you to watch this and know that you're going to be known as a coward from now on. You know, like, I understand what he's doing in his life. He's got a really nice fiance, and you can go back and look at all the videos they've made of her. She's a very attractive lady. Mm-hmm. He had her block me on Instagram years ago because she liked me so much, and he's so insecure that he had her blocked. But he's got a fine fiance. You should just go worry about getting married and making babies and quitting comedy, because if you don't have what it takes to take the heat, then you don't need to be in this business. You can go on and get the hell on. Yeah.
It's a hot take right there.
It is.
It's a hot take.
He's saying that he'll still do shows and still come around, but what happens if Brett's on stage? Are you going to wear earmuffs? Earmuffs and a blindfold and maybe a diaper?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely embarrassing.
So with this now, like you said, comedy is a brotherhood, right?
Yeah.
So when something like this happens, does that rumble up? Like, obviously, a lot of you guys call Yuck Yucks home in Calgary. Does that rumble it up a little bit? Does that ruffle some feathers with some other guys in the green room?
You know what? It's inconsequential what the other comedians are thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's about actions speak louder than words.
Correct.
And when you turn tail and run like that, and especially leave your partner who's brought you to the dance.
Yeah.
Todd would not be anywhere where he is without Brett Forte, 100%. And for him, within a few days, to jump ship like that, it's embarrassing. We're all coming out of the trenches together.
Yeah, and like we were talking before, comedy is something that shouldn't be touched in that sense. And yeah. I look at comedy like this. It's like MMA to me. Everybody yeah. in the gym, we kind of need one another. We yeah. need to balance shit. And then when you have, and when it comes time to dance, and it yeah. comes time to square up, and you got to battle the audience, it's just you versus them. But you needed those guys in the green room hey man, like you're doing this wrong. You're like they try this, and like you're yeah. working together. So does that kind of
it is because. Well, what I see is with that type of attitude mm-hmm. and willing to use those actions, like you can go look up Todd Ness on Instagram and see his post of why he's leaving the two mirrors. In fact, let me see if I can punch it up here, and I'll just read it out loud because the words are so disingenuous to what he's trying to get across here. There we go, got him. You guys should look him up and comment on it. So, two Mears fans. So, he should have said, Brett Forte fans, I have made the difficult decision to step away from the Two Mears podcast and live shows. This was a personal decision that I have made based on my values and vision for my comedy career, which doesn't exist anymore. You're done.
Dang.
Thank you to all the listeners over the past year and a half for your continuous support of Brett. It was one hell of a ride. I hope some of you will come along with me to my next ventures. Well, maybe your next venture should be just focusing on your oil field job.
Well, he's a patch guy?
No, he works in an office.
I was going to say, I don't think...
Tongue in the anus. He's really good at his job.
They call really him the, good. They call him the toothbrush.
Toilet paper, actually. And, you know, I respect Todd, what he's done to make it this far. But once you've made it to this far, you should know there ain't no going back.
Now with something like that, if we're being honest, in my mind anyways, that's kind of like where you're drawing a line in the sand. And I don't think comedy has that, doesn't deserve that line. There should never be that line. And when somebody puts that line there, it should be always stepped over. Somebody should be willing to step over.
Obliterated.
Yeah.
Every fucking time.
Yeah.
No retreat, no surrender.
Mm-hmm.
You never back down. Ever, ever, ever. And this is what perpetuates the negativity. Like, my vision for Todd in the future
yeah.
is doing stand-up at COVID re-education camps. He'll be one of the top counselors working for the CBC too, you know, because his track record is impeccable. He's the type of guy, and he plays hockey jock. He should know what the world's about, and when the whole team's going all in, you go all in.
Word.
Yeah.
Dang, man.
Yeah, I've heard dang. Stories. He's never told it to me because he's always been quite intimidated by me, obviously. And I heard back in his hockey day, bench clearing brawl, everybody on the ice, and Todd sat on the bench like a good little boy. He was the only guy that didn't join in the melee. Even the guy on your team with the hearing aid went out there, willing to get his head bashed in. And Todd sat on the bench like a good boy. Because that's what history remembers, is the guys that were on the side of the battlefield.
Do you think now, going back to the showcase, all right,
yeah,
we're digging back into the history books, the last show ever, do you think that he brought a guy in like you to take the brunt of things for you?
He definitely did, because he's a smart enough guy. He wanted to win.
Yeah.
And obviously I was the only choice of a guy that can go up against you, because Danger Cats is worldwide, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not some flash in the pan. You're gonna bring people to the show. What they do at, like, after I lost on Todd's behalf, there's a dare that they do. And so on the podcast, they do a dare. And that was kind of what kept the show and the rapport moving. And so they had a dare that they were going to do. And I think it was a really weak dare on the week that I was there.
Was putting shitty underwear in the sink or something? Did it get completed, though?
That's what I want to know. So,
did he own up to his work?
Yeah, because Brett didn't get canceled to the 3rd, and we did our show on, like, 27th.
October 27th, yeah.
Yeah, so he should have had more than enough time to get that job done. I should give him a call right now and see if he did the dare. Hey, what time is it?
It's about,
it's about 3:30 here. I'll give him a call.
Then let's see. Let's find this out. This is information we need.
Please stay on the line while your call is completed. Long distance charges may apply.
Nope. Oh, come on, Todd. Pick up. Today's a work day, though.
It is.
Oh, hey, Todd, this is Walker. If you get a chance, could you give me a call back, please? Thanks. Bye.
I guess we'll never know. We were hoping to get that live.
Yeah, I know, but that's the thing is, like, when you're doing dares and stuff like that, when it gets down to, like, soiled underpants in the sink.
For the old lady to see?
Yeah, you're grasping at straws, man. It was probably time for them to split up and Todd to go on his way.
Go the married route.
Yeah.
And let the renegade renegade.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get the NWO together, Daddy, and fucking take over this world.
Oh, yeah, yeah, now we're talking.
And Todd, you can MC. Be the MC.
At least you're kind enough to...
That everybody likes. Here's something that everybody's going to like.
Uh-huh.
A hockey jock.
Yeah, and then let the cowboys come in and shoot up the saloon.
Oh, yeah.
And you can patch the bullet holes.
Yeah, hang them high.
Because when it's high noon, partner.
Man, in this world, I don't darken a doorway without being ready for that.
Yeah.
Like, it's serious business right now.
Mm-hmm.
And any way to make a dollar in this life, I salute you. Because it's getting hard out there to make money. And they're doing everything in their power to make it so that you can't make a living. They punish you as a tax-paying citizen.
I agree. I fucking couldn't agree more, especially right... Again, it's so hacky to talk about the COVID times, but then when you're going into lockdown, you know, clubs are shutting down. Fuck, we've had 4 or 5 rooms, I believe, up here just say, piss on it, we're not opening up again. A bar that was... did you ever do Empress here?
Yeah, man. I used to, anytime I was in town and I could make that Sunday show.
Yeah.
Love that room.
Shut down. Yeah. Yeah. The bar had to close. So
heartbreaker.
And like that was the first room that I ever got to give her a whirl at.
Yeah.
And so I hear all these, you know, these echoes through the streets of Edmonton of how great that room was. And I went there with my shittiest performance ever. First, but shittiest. And I don't get to see in the future of like what that would have been with other comics. Because I watched some guys that night rock the fucking house.
Yeah, man. And that's the thing, too, is you can, when you're watching shows and at live shows, you watch what works and how people do things. And you learn from their mistakes as well.
Mm-hmm.
See what people do and recalibrate. But Uncle Hack, it's an honor to be in Edmonton and to be on your show.
Yes.
And get to talk to the Danger Cats. And hopefully soon we'll get rocking and rolling shows and these people can come out to the shows and see what almost got me banned in Europe for.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not some guy that's just been around to a couple open mics, man. I've toured across North America. And
with the legend himself, hey?
Jason Rouse, yeah.
Fuck yeah.
I got to ride Jason's coattails. And, you know, he gave me an opportunity, and I hit it out of the park, man.
Good for you, dude. That's awesome.
Home runs.
Because, like, we were kind of chatting about it when we were down in Calgary.
Yeah.
And you were the only guy to ride the whole tour with him.
Yeah, man, I'm the only guy that's ever crossed the finish line with him. Because it ain't easy traveling with Jason Rouse. If you look a couple podcasts back, you'll get an idea why.
Yeah.
But, oh, yes, it's Todd.
Here we go. I'll put it in the front.
Hello?
What's up, Daddy?
Hey, I was wondering if you and Jen did that sketch for the Two Mirror Showcase.
No, which one?
The one that dirty underpants in the sink.
No.
You didn't?
No. How come?
Well, because you had ample time to do the dare. Why didn't you film it?
Well, because by now we're not doing the Two Mirror Showcase anyway.
Yeah, but this was before you quit the Two Mirror Showcase.
Right.
So you had me on the show. I go up there, lose to this internet phenom, and then you don't even do the dare?
Yeah. I mean, what difference would it make?
Those words will echo through history, Todd. What difference would it make?
I mean, yeah, honestly, man, what happened was, like, if we were continuing the show, I would have done it for sure. But by the time that, you know, everything happened, we sorted everything out, I still hadn't recorded it. And then, you know, if we're not continuing the show anymore, there's no point in
you can take
if there's no point in continuing the show anymore, those are the only words that I had to hear. Later, Todd. I'll see you at the shows with your earmuffs and your blindfold on.
Ray from the horses. Wow. Oh, boy.
I'm so glad he called back. That was awesome.
That felt good?
Yeah. That was good.
Oh.
That was weak. So weak.
Man.
So
what does this mean now for Sam Walker moving forward?
Well, as many differences as Brett and I have had, I'm going to be solid with him, and I'm going to help him in any way possible. And we're going to unite forces again and hopefully produce and do some shows. And I'd love to have you a part of it.
Gladly.
Yeah.
Anytime you need a guy to do five down there, you let me know.
Dude, well,
and we'll run the fucking house down.
We goddamn will. We goddamn will. I'm excited. It's going to be a lot of fun for the future.
I think so, too. I think that things are going fast for me right now in stand-up, and I'm not saying like it's great, but I want to be rock solid, and that's why I've been like under the radar. I'll talk about it on a podcast, but I'll never. That was the only time I ever told anybody where I was going to do stand-up, and for obvious reasons. You're putting me up against a five-year vet. I need any advantage I could possibly fucking get, and you have a good hometown crowd.
Yeah,
as
I
it
do.
Is.
I do.
And you know, and it could have worked horribly in my, not in my favor, I should say, as me go up, because I know my audience is going to find you funny. And that could have just, like, there were so many fucking factors that I thought about, and I'm like, do I not say nothing? Or do I just go down, make sure?
It is.
Yeah, you know what I mean? There was just so many things I was fucking, but then I was like, at the end of the day, I'm like, that's a compliment. At the end of the day, that's a compliment to me that they're going to put me against Sam fucking Walker.
Yeah.
My first showcase, I got to go against the guy 5 years. It's win-win to me. That's how I looked at it.
Yeah.
I lose to a five-year veteran or on the upscale chance or the fucking not upscale, the odd chance that I fucking do win, I get a little almost like a, that's like a, okay.
It is, you know, and even though Todd paid me $200 to do the show, you still beat me.
Yeah.
You still beat me fair and square, and you can use that as a credit.
It's not the win that felt great. It was just the fact of, like, the acceptance into the comedy community. You know what I mean? It's like my back was against the wall. I lied to Forte. I told him I had 10. I don't have fucking 10.
That's even better. That's how you get it. Fake it till you make it.
Yeah, I bold-faced lied to him. Told him, he's like, he was commenting on one of the live streams of this podcast with me and him.
Yeah.
And he goes, you got 10 down in Calgary. And I text him, I was like, are you fucking with me? And he goes, no, you got 10. You got 10? Oh, I got 10. and I don't. I lied. I'm bold-faced lie. I'll take that, though. And I was just fucking back against the wall. Hope to God this fucking works out.
Yeah. And in an alternate universe, maybe you didn't have 10 minutes and you died 1,000 deaths. But that's not what happened.
No.
That one night, the stars aligned and you fucking
and now
did
we,
it.
And now we have...
I'm here today because of that night.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sitting here right now, so...
And it worked out tremendously better than I thought it was. I played out every scenario in my head.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is going to go fucking horrible, is what I thought. I'm going to die up there. The comics are going to fucking die laughing because Numbnuts over here thinks he can do some fucking... Come up and throw the gift of gab at the people.
Hey. Yeah. But that's what we got in store for the future. I don't know what we're going to call them yet, but it's going to be, let's start doing shows. Edmonton, Calgary. And
yes.
Do Alberta, man. These people need the entertainment.
They do.
And they're ready for it.
They are.
Tell.
And they need fellas like us.
Oh, yeah.
They do.
There's nobody representing them right now.
No.
There's nobody in mainstream entertainment representing them.
No. Good point.
And I don't want to be mainstream entertainment. You check me out on Instagram, Sam Walker Live, and each and every follow that I've had, I can pretty much remember who they were because I get like a few people after a show.
Yeah.
Coming and getting to me. And those are the people that get it. I don't want to be loved by everybody.
No, fuck no. Yeah. That's too much tap dancing you gotta do. You know what I mean? And I'm not into that. I'm fucking...
I'm done dancing for dollars.
Yeah. Unless the doll... Maybe.
Well, yeah. Never say never. It's true.
Fuck yeah.
That's true. I've been around a while. I've done some things.
You've seen the...
People ask me what I do, and it's whatever it takes. That's not a joke. That's life.
That's cold hard facts.
Yeah.
Fucking A. Well, I appreciate you coming down, man, and chatting with me. We got to the bottom of that hellfire.
We did. That was good. I got it off my chest. I've been feeling tense about it, and it was good to say it out loud and then even get him on the phone and hear his weak argument. Oh, no, no, no. And then he turned on the charm there. He turned on the charm and then tried to flip it, but...
Felt the pressure.
Yeah, man, exactly. Ugh. So you can see me and Brett Forte tearing it up, coming to a town or a city near you.
Hell yeah. Thank you again. Let the wolves kiss.